Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm speaking with Ken Schaefer, author of a new young adult novel with a long title, An Otherwise Perfect Plan, a novel of mystery, love, and of chocolate that defies description. In addition to writing novels, my guest is also a screenwriter, having worked for companies such as Disney, Paramount, and ABC, on projects ranging from a prequel to Sleeping Beauty, to Star Trek, The Next Generation, and ABC Night at the Movies. And if all that isn't enough, he writes children's books, has founded Moonjumper Press, and is the creator of Frameforge, an Emmy award-winning screenwriting software for filmmakers. Welcome, Ken Schaefer. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Let's begin with your book and its chapter titles.
Yes.
In addition to the book's title, each chapter has its own title. So why don't you read a couple of them to give our listeners the sense of its flavor?
Okay. Chapter 4, in which I learn just enough to be driven really crazy. Chapter 5, a life without dwarves is not a tall order. Chapter 6, I'll stop after 7, in case of emergency, break glass. And in Chapter 7, in which something actually goes right, and that can't be good.
My favorite was, if it wasn't my blood, then why is my heart bleeding on the floor?
Yeah. I think one of my favorite ones is in which Not Dad cracks the code, and I realize yet again that I can't do believable chilled vegetable impressions.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your process here. How do you think this stuff up? And how do you get into the heads of 12 to 18-year-olds to come up with these titles, these chapters, and the whole plot?
The plot, honestly, I have no memory how I came up with it. The way I tend to work is I'll have an idea, often a scene, and then I'll sort of figure out how that fits into a larger story and kind of work backwards. I mean, with this one, the basic sort of story structure of the book is that a young girl knows nothing about her father. She's grown up, mm-hmm. and the only thing she knows is that he and her mom met in Vegas, and there's a photo strip of the two of them together. Then she was born 9 months later. So put it together. And she, for various reasons, decides that she needs to find him. And so the structure of the story is her quest for him, though it's, in my mind at least, much less about that story than it is about her perspectives on the world and the sardonic way she looks at things and questions things, and mixed in with a coming of age of her realizing that, well, I don't want to give too much away, but coming of age story, you figure it out. So the real answer to your question is I started writing it when my daughter was probably about 14, 15, and a lot of things that were going on in her life, her friends' lives, and whatnot, and the combination of that and the YA books that she was introducing us to just basically came together, and I said, I can do that.
So that's why you chose a female protagonist.
Yeah, it just felt right for this, and, you know, all of her friends were girls, and so I was surrounded by teenage girls, and...
Oh, no.
She was the perfect child. Not in a goody-two-shoes way, but we never went through the whole, I hate you. Then, other than her complaining that we took her places when she was too young to remember, and she hates us for that, but...
Okay.
I can take that.
So you decided on having a 16-year-old girl for a protagonist?
Right. And
Yeah.
then the chapter title sort of each chapter had, its own little thing, and then I basically would find something that core to that chapter, and my sort of goal with the title was to make something that sounds funny, but which you don't really know what it means until sort of the end of the chapter, the middle of the chapter, and you're like, okay, that's, I can't, she can't do chilled vegetable impression. She can't be cool as a cucumber. I get it now, that kind
So
of thing.
did you run your chapter titles and other things past her or her
Oh,
friends?
yes. In fact, she basically read it as a serial. So every night, I'm a vampire. I'm up till about 4 in the morning every night, and so I would do my writing every night. And in the morning, she would get her new pages,
Oh,
and
that's cool.
she would read them, and in many cases, giggle out loud, which meant that I was on the right track. So yeah, I mean, she was my ongoing audience, and then actually a bunch of her friends, once there was a full draft, read it and gave me feedback, and a couple of them read it multiple times, and so
That's
yeah,
great.
I had a built-in source.
And I understand you showed your cover to kids that age as well.
Yeah, actually, by the time I got around to deciding to get it published and whatnot, I was struggling with the title, and I actually went back to her elementary school, which went through 8th grade, and her high school, and found English teachers who would show a series of titles and covers to their class and have a discussion about it, and they said the kids loved it, and it was really useful to me, and that's how I ended up with this title.
What a fun way to do research.
Yeah, it really was.
And this novel, so far, it's gotten really excellent reviews. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Including Kirkus's rare Get It verdict and must reads from several others, including Midwest Book Review. And the Kirkus review specifically mentioned that the book had a, quote, timeless, almost cinematic quality to the characters and story structure, unquote. Tell us about that. Do you think your screenwriting career and the software creation helped you create a novel with that kind of cinematic structure?
No.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I screenwriting and novel writing are two completely different beasts.
How so?
Well, a screenplay has to be entirely visual. That as you're writing it, if you say something like, he looks at her and he knows this is the girl he's going to marry, you've done something fundamentally wrong, because there's no, I mean, how's the audience supposed to know that? That you have to, that screenplays are supposed to be purely visual, such that you have dialogue, which obviously the world sees. And then you have descriptions, but they have to be completely external. He gets a mysterious smile would be fine, because that's something the audience can see, and then we have to interpret that. Hopefully you've done it all well enough, and the director and actors, pull it together such that you've communicated everything you want to. I personally think a lot of times when motivations of actors or characters or whatnot of films are just weird, that they've, in the screenplay, they've written too much. So everybody involved goes, oh, I know why they're doing this, because you've told me, he hates her, but if you haven't shown it, then you have a problem. You're a novelist, a novel is the other side, looking out. And what I struggled with as a novel is you can spend 20 minutes talking about a water droplet, and that could be great, or it could be just like, whoa, you're way off in the weeds. So the one thing that may be true is that with a screenplay, that you're so tight for time that everything has to have a reason for being there.
Right.
And so I think I'd maybe do approach things a little differently, that I'm much more sort of cognizant as to why I'm doing this at any given moment, although a lot of stuff, I find I do something and then later I go, oh, that's why I did that.
Well, which one do you enjoy more?
It depends. I mean, at the moment, I'm much more into the sort of novel world, and particularly with Gwen, she's so much fun to be with, as it
Right.
were, that I'm really enjoying that. But I like variety. I mean, that's partly why I'm doing so many different things. So yeah, anybody wants to hire me to write a screenplay, I'm there,
Yeah, for yourself, you don't have to hire yourself, huh?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I've had so many things sort of almost happen with my screenwriting that it gets exhausting. Most recently, I had actually a television series set up in the UK on
Wow.
a script I wrote that then became a novel that then became a television series, and we got it set up, and then it was in development for 2 years and then went poof.
Yeah.
So,
Well, books don't quite go poof that way.
yes, exactly. They just go thud. But
Well, going back to your reviews, another one of your reviews brought up an interesting point that you don't have any bad guys or villains or antagonists in this book, which is not the norm. To quote from the review, this book is more like real life, only funnier. The teenage heroine actually likes and appreciates her mother, gasp. And the best friend love interest is a consistently nice guy. There's no actual villain. And even the peripheral characters are well-intentioned, the review says. So what gives with that? What made you choose that
Yeah,
way?
I actually didn't realize that until that reviewer said this.
Oh, that's funny.
And I thought, wow, that's insightful. Boy, I'm smart. I mean, in many ways, it really came out of the story in which her mother, due to a set of circumstances which I won't reveal, made a choice that had a huge amount of impact on her and a bunch of other people. It just set in motion a series of events that didn't seem to require a villain. I mean, the conflict is just getting through life, getting through the day, figuring out, how are we going to solve this problem? I want to go to college, whatever. And
Right.
there's sort of enough, I wouldn't say quiet conflict, but enough stress, and I mean, we all know there's enough stress in the world without actual bad people, of which there are many. And your daily lives and stresses aren't particularly because necessarily somebody's, a bad person. It's because you want to accomplish something and it's hard and whatnot. So it wasn't something which I set out and said, yeah, I'm going to make this, without a villain. Life is the obstacle, is
Yeah.
really the story, and there are good people out there who help you along the way if you let them.
Right. And I think that's a lot more like real life. Less formulaic, I guess.
I didn't want to just, do another one of those, novels. So my goal really was just to tell this story, and it came out that way.
Well, it's a lot of fun. Tell us about the Moon Jumper Press and what that's about, and about your children's books.
Okay. Well, that again starts with my daughter, without whom I would be nothing. She was, as most kids, in that 5 and earlier range, Daddy, tell me a story. Daddy, tell me a story. And most of them are utterly abysmal and random and, make about as much sense as telling dreams. But one day, I actually hit upon what I thought was what turned out to be a pretty good story, which was about a cow who each night sneaks out of the barn to listen to the farmer telling stories to his kids. And this cow is very enthusiastic and somewhat naive, and hears about the cow who jumped over the moon. So she gets all excited and she's going to try and do that. And then she, needless to say, has some difficulties accomplishing this task. Life gets in the way. So she goes around to all the farm animals and asks the frogs, how they jump, and they all give their sage advice about lily pads giving you, your good bounce. And she's like, "I'm a little big for that, I think."
Well, big for a lily pad.
Yeah, and she goes to the crickets, and it's like, "You gotta chirp when you lift off," and none of it works. And she's about to give up, and she goes and takes a drink from a stream, and there at the bottom of the stream is the moon, and so she jumps over the full moon. And my mind produces a lot of verse. I wouldn't call it quite poetry. And so I had told this story much as I told it to you just now. And then I think my wife and daughter were clothes shopping, which for men is so much fun. And I was sitting there and I just started composing it in verse. There once was a cow, a most marvelous beast, the fastest fly flicker in all the Northeast. She spent all her day in fast fly flicking fun until the sun set and the long day was done. Then she crept from her house to from the barn to the house on the hill, where under the window she'd lie very still. Yes, under the window she'd settle in tight, for the farmer read books to his children each night. And I went from there. And then I ended up writing two more cow stories, and which I could tell you about, but we could spend the entire
So
conversation. Yes.
what's the title of that first one that you wrote?
The first one is The Cow Who Conquered the Moon, and it's not yet available because I keep on noodling with the images, and I'm not an artist. So you mentioned that I actually have a software company, and we make a software program called FrameForge, which is not a screenwriting program. That's what I used to do. No worries. It's a what's called a pre-visualization program. It's for directors and cinematographers to be able to shoot in their computer exactly what the camera will see in any given set. So it's an optically accurate virtual film studio. And we have a cow in it and a frog and some other stuff. So I
I
actually
see.
made images for this book in my filmmaking software and sort of laid it all out. But it seems a little simple to me, at least, the imagery for a children's book. And so I haven't put it out there yet because I'm not quite ready.
You said it's called
FrameForge Studio. And it's
okay.
been used on everything from Downton Abbey to Spider-Man
Wow.
Homecoming to there's a recent Netflix movie called something, We Have a Ghost, I think. And it was used on all 7 seasons of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wow.
and so on. And we won an Emmy for it a couple years back, and it's won other awards. So it's an interesting program because it's actually used by directors, cinematographers, and VFX supervisors, but this is an entirely different topic that we could take up the whole
Yeah,
conversation on.
but
But
you, I what do you think it would be useful for novelists?
could be. I mean, basically you can set up any scene you want in it. So, but it is really designed for shooting, for creating the visual of something. It depends how people, I mean, novelists work in so many different ways that I don't want to say yes or no. I mean, it's not what it's really
Could
designed
be,
for,
right.
but certainly if it helps you visualize something and inspires you to figure out a scene, sure, why not?
I might want to try that out myself.
Sure.
Okay, one last question. What are you working on now, And when can we expect to see that in print?
Darn good question. I'm working on actually a couple things right now. I'm doing a rewrite of my first novel, which is called Green Sleeves, and is actually the project that was set up as a television series. And it's an adult, not adult, but not YA, historical fantasy, mixing the historical realities of the life of Edward VI, who's the son of Henry VIII, and all the politics and whatnot going on there, and the contemporary mythological world. And it's entitled Green Sleeves, after the song. My manager had submitted it out to a bunch of places. We actually got some semi-consistent feedback, which is rare. And I'm taking that in right now and doing a rewrite, and then it's going to go back out. I'm also working with a friend of mine on another children's book entitled A is for Ah! And it's
Okay, but can
a,
you repeat that, please?
yes, A is for Ah! It's a Halloween-themed alphabet book, and it has a bit of a story. So it's A is for Ah, which you yell at the sound of a very loud boo, though there's no one around, and goes off like that.
Okay.
She is Alexis St. John. She's an amazing artist who, unfortunately, got, well, unfortunately for me, fortunately for her, she got a opportunity to get a master's program, to get a master's in fine arts, and has been off doing that. So she hasn't been working with me on this. So we're sort of paused that. And then I'm working on a sequel to this book, because I had a reviewer who basically said, "You have to do it."
Do you have a title yet for your sequel?
Probably An Otherwise Perfect Summer.
Ah.
And it's set a year after the end of this book. And if you read this book, you'll know what I'm talking about, where she is and her mom are on the island that we learn about at the end.
Spoilers.
No, that's sort of a hint, a tease, not a spoiler.
Okay.
I have, I think, a really good story idea for that,
Okay.
though it's as yet a wee bit formless, but I'll get there. Oh, and then the big thing I'm working on right now actually is an audio version of this book, which I have a just wonderful, I mean, she embodies Gwen, narrator named Renee Cannon. And she's recorded the entire book, and right now we're going through and just fixing little mispronunciations
Oh,
and
wonderful.
things like that.
Great.
And that is probably not in print, but the thing that you're going to see soonest. So it will be available on Audible probably in maybe 2 months,
Great.
fingers crossed. And that should be great. I mean, I had a bunch of people audition, and she just was like, "Oh my God, she is Gwen."
Oh, that's
And
wonderful.
she does some really fun voices for the other characters, and I really could not be more thrilled.
I look forward to hearing it. Well, that's all fascinating. It was so nice talking with you, Ken Schaefer, but our time is up. So thank you for coming on to the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been great fun.
For more information on Ken Schaefer and his work, please visit www.kenschaefer.com, and Schaefer is spelled Schaefer. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.